Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short tales with a lot of music and a lot of fun. So, I am super excited that you're tuning in this week, and let's get into our music.
Nena jo shishe tutte, nena jo ਕਿਸਮਤ ਬਦਲਦੀ ਵੇਖੀ ਮੈਂ ਜਗ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਮੈਂ ਰੱਬ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਕਿਸਮਤ ਬਦਲਦੀ ਵੇਖੀ ਮੈਂ ਜਗ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਮੈਂ ਰੱਬ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਚੱਲ ਚੱਲ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਵੇ ਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਵੇ ਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਮਰ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਵੇ ਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਮਰ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਵੇ ਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਮਰ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਕਿਸਮਤ ਬਦਲਦੀ ਵੇਖੀ ਮੈਂ ਚੱਕ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਤੂੰ ਆਖਰੀ ਉਮੀਦ ਮੇਰੀ ਟੁੱਟ ਕਿਤੇ ਜਾਵੀ ਨਾ ਲੁੱਟੀ ਹੋਈ ਨੂੰ ਵੇ ਜਾਨੀ ਲੁੱਟ ਕਿਤੇ ਜਾਵੀ ਨਾ ਮੈਂ ਝੂਠ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਸੱਚ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਪੱਥਰ ਵੇਖਣੇ ਮੈਂ ਕੱਚ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਚੱਲ ਚੱਲ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਮਰ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਮਰ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਕਿਸਮਤ ਬਦਲਦੀ ਵੇਖੀ ਮੈਂ ਚੱਕ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਜੇ ਦੇਣਾ ਏ ਤੇ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਸਾਥ ਦੇਵੀ ਮੇਰਾ ਤੂੰ ਜੇ ਰੋਲਣਾ ਵੀ ਏ ਤੇ ਫਿਰ ਚੰਗੀ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਰੋਲਵੇ ਮੈਂ ਚੰਦ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਤਾਰੇ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਮੈਂ ਹਾਏ ਲੋੜ ਪੈਣ ਤੇ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ 'ਚ ਸਾਰੇ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਮੈਂ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਚੱਲ ਚੱਲ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ
Dear listeners, I hope you have been enjoying the music, but now it is time for our short story of the week. This one is really special to me, so I hope you really like it. The night was quieter than usual. Not the kind of quiet that comforts you, but the kind that feels like the world is holding its breath. Arav noticed it the moment he stepped out of the radio station. The usual hum of late-night Kingston, distant laughter, a passing car, even the wind brushing past the trees, all of it felt paused, suspended. But then he heard it, a note, not from his headphones, not from anywhere visible, a single lingering sur. Sur means note in Hindi and Punjabi. Arav froze. That sur, or note, carried something he couldn't quite explain. It felt older than memory, older than language, and somehow it was calling him. And he followed it. Through narrow alleyways, past buildings he had walked by 100 times but never truly seen, the sound grew richer, unfolding into a phrase now, unmistakably a rag, but not one he recognized. Finally, he stopped in front of a door. It stood alone, where there should have been nothing, no building, no wall, just a tall wooden door carved with intricate patterns. The carvings pulsed faintly, like they were breathing. And at the center, etched in delicate script, "Songs forgotten are never lost." Arav's heart started racing. He should have turned back, but he didn't. He placed his hand on the door, and it opened. Inside, there was no room. There was a sky, a vast, endless expanse of twilight with stars shimmering like notes suspended in time. Floating in this space were hundreds of glowing fragments, each one resonating with sound. Rugs. But not the ones that he knew. These felt, I don't know, older, untouched for centuries. A voice emerged, soft yet powerful. "Few hear them, and fewer answer." Arav turned. An old figure stood there, draped in light and shadow, their presence shifting like music itself. "Where am I?" Arav whispered. "In the archive of sound that time forgot," the figure gestured around. "These are rags that were never written, never passed down. Some were lost to history, others abandoned." Arav stepped forward, mesmerized. Can I hear them?" The figure smiled. "You already are listening to them." One fragment drifted toward him. As it touched his fingertips, the world dissolved. He was no longer standing. He was inside the music. He stood in a desert at dusk. The sky burnt orange and violet, and the air carried a melody woven with longing. Each note stretched like the horizon, vast and aching. The rag wasn't just sound, it was emotion, it was memory, it was a story. Arav felt it move through him, not just into his ears, but into his very chest, his breath, his pulse. He understood it, and without words, when the final note faded, he was back, breathing heavily. "What was that?" And the figure replied, "A song that was once sung only at the edge of endings." Arav spelled what felt like hours, maybe days, moving through the songs. Each of them was its own world. One was rain falling on ancient temples, and another one was a celebration that never ended. But there was one that was silent. A rag built on pauses where what wasn't played mattered more than what was played. And with each note, Arav changed. His understanding deepened. His voice, when he tried to hum along, felt different. It felt stronger. It felt truer. Finally, the figure spoke again. "You have listened, but listening is only the beginning." Arav looked up. "What do you mean? These rags do not exist to be stored. They exist to be lived." The fragments around him began to dim. They need a voice, a vessel, somebody to share it with the whole damn world. Arav felt it before he could respond. The music, all of it, calling him. And he asked, "Why me?" And the figure said, because you didn't come here looking for power. You came because you heard something you did not quite understand, and you chose to follow it. And the door appeared again. Behind it, the real world, the real Kingston, the radio station, all of it, his life. And the figure said, you can leave and forget, or you can carry them with you. You see, Arav hesitated, but then he stepped forward. The moment he crossed the threshold, the world rushed back. Sound returned, cars, voices, the wind, but something was quite different. He was different. That night, on his radio show, Arav didn't play his usual set. He sat in silence for a moment and then spoke. Tonight, I am not playing music. I'm telling you a story, quite like I am right now. He closed his eyes and began. The first note he sang. It wasn't perfect, it wasn't polished, but it carried something deeper, something ancient. Listeners across the city paused. They didn't know why, but they felt it. Days passed, then weeks. Arv's music began to spread, not because it was loud, but because it was very real. Each performance carried a piece of something timeless. People described it differently. Some said it felt like remembering something they had never known. Others felt like it was being seen. And sometimes, late at night, when the world went quiet again, Arav could hear it. Another note, another rag, waiting. Because the door never truly closed. And somewhere beyond what we can hear, there are still melodies. Perhaps melodies of myth, waiting for someone brave enough to listen. And with that, we will continue with our music.
Spring is in the air, which means it's time once again for the Banree Foundation's annual spring celebration. Join us as we recognize the incredible achievements of mature women students at Queen's University. The festivities will take place at Grant Hall on May 2nd at 2 p.m. This is a free event and everyone is welcome to attend. Find event details by visiting the Banree Center website, following us on Instagram or Facebook, or emailing brc@queensu.ca. Come celebrate exceptional women with us. See you there.
Are you between 14 and 30 years old and interested in organizing a French language activity for youth in your community? The VIF program can make it happen. You could receive $850 to create your activity, and your partnering organization could get $150 to support it. Bring your idea to life. Visit proclamvif.ca and apply today.
Yara menu तकदा नहीं तेरे बिन यारा और किते तकदा नहीं क्या तेरे बाजो मेरा रंग तेरा चढ़े
अखियां च तू वसदा ए नायक ਮਿਲਾ ਵੇ ਇਨ੍ਹਾਂ ਅੱਖੀਆਂ ਚ ਪਾਵਾਂ ਕਿਵੇਂ ਕਜਲਾ ਵੇ ਅੱਖੀਆਂ ਚ ਤੂੰ ਵਸਦਾ ਵੇ ਅੱਖੀਆਂ ਚ ਤੂੰ ਵਸਦਾ ਓਏ ਅੱਖੀਆਂ ਚ ਤੂੰ ਵਸਦਾ
And just like that, we arrive at the end of tonight's journey. Well, this afternoon's journey. I just want to leave you guys with some thoughts. If there's one thing music teaches us, it's that silence is never empty. It holds what came before and what's still waiting to be heard. There's moments, small ones, when something calls out to us. A melody, or a memory, or a feeling that we don't fully understand, and we have a choice to ignore it or to follow it. Music, especially in Hindustani classical, was never meant to be heard. It was meant to be felt. So maybe tonight you don't open a magical door, but listen a little closer to the songs that you love and the silence in between. Thanks for spending your time here with me on Melodies of Myth. I will see you next week.
Are you between 14 and 30 years old and interested in organizing a French language activity for youth in your community? The VIF program can make it happen. You could receive $850 to create your activity, and your partnering organization could get $150 to support it. Bring your idea to life. Visit programvif.ca and apply today.
This is Wings. Somalia is a country that occupies the coast of the Horn of Africa, jutting into the Arabian Sea. Convenient for trade with the Middle East and Asia, it's also been vulnerable to occupations and conflict for at least 1,300 years. Nowadays, around 2 million Somali refugees and their descendants live in exile communities dotted around the world. In many places, they are not too welcome.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Here's our Wings reporter in Mombasa, Kenya, Diana Wanyonyi, interviewing Firdaus Ahmed, a Somali refugee who serves as both a chairperson and a paralegal at the Mombasa Refugees Justice Center. For her, the move to Kenya opened opportunity.
My name is Firdaus Ahmed. I'm the first elected Somali chair lady in Mombasa for the refugee community. I'm also currently the founder of Beacon of Light, an organization that empowers, educates, and uplifts women, young girls, and youth mm-hmm. who are very vulnerable and from the marginalized community.
Mm-hmm. Firdaus, tell us about yourself.
Actually, it was very difficult because I come from a community that does not believe in women empowerment, mm-hmm. a community that does not believe in women being leaders. So let me talk about my educational background and my family. I'm the second last born in my family of seven. Mm-hmm. And for my education, I thank God. It was during the Honorable Mwai Kibaki that I got an opportunity to go to primary school. So if it was not for him,
the late president,
Honorable Mwai Kibaki, actually, I would have been very, very illiterate like the most of the other women. But I thank God we got that opportunity. Me and my younger sister, we went to studied in Baraki Girls Primary School. And my journey as a leadership started when I joined the primary school. It's something that I had an ambition to. It's something that I really loved, becoming a leader. When I joined the primary school, I was officially elected as their class monitor. And later on, became the class prefect. During my activities, I was then later on chosen as the chairlady of the Red Cross. In my primary school, that is how my journey of leadership became, and I continued with it up to high school, though I had a lot of hate, because for Somali women to stand and talk in front of people, it was very hard. The religious background, the cultural thing, they were like, ah, you're a lady, you cannot do this, stop doing it, why are you portraying yourself everywhere? The religion does not allow you to do this, the culture does not want you to do this. I was like, no.
Because they're a Muslim.
Yes. And that did not even stop me. This is what I really love. And I have seen that women voices were not heard. So I had to be that change. Before changing somebody else, I had to be the change first. And that is how I started.
Mm-hmm. Are you a refugee in Kenya?
Yes, I'm a refugee here in Kenya. I was brought here when I was too young. I don't know what to say, but my family has been going through a lot. When I hear their stories, I wish our country, Kenya, since I've never been to Somalia, so Kenya has become my country. It is where I live now. It is where I have been studying all my entire life. So I wish Kenya can remain the way it is, very peaceful. Let us not take things for granted. What you have now is what we wish for, what we want to see in our countries. But we are lacking those things. Mm-hmm. So let us be very peaceful. Let us be the peace builders in our own countries.
What were you told about Somalia?
What my parents told me, what I've really heard most was about the difficulties and the challenges that they were going through, since my dad was a colonel in, a high-profile person, a colonel in the army. So the challenges that they were facing during the war, when the war broke in Somalia, like they were the high targets, no food, no electricity, my mom was pregnant, running one way from the other, women being raped, boys being taken by force with the military force, or those people who were against the president at that time.
Anti-government.
Yes, anti-government, yeah. So there was a lot that was going through, but I don't want to talk about them now, because when I talk about my country, I feel very emotional. I've never been there, and whatever my parents were going through, especially my mom and my dad, who were living in a luxurious life, you run to another country, leaving everything behind to save your lives. You do not even think about your property, everything. You just leave everything behind, thinking about your lives and the lives of your children. So whenever I hear those stories, they really make me very emotional. I'm like, God, do not show us these things here. Mm-hmm. Please, God, make our country be peaceful.
Sorry, Firdaus. Those kind of stories you were told at what age?
I think I started asking these questions. I never knew first if I was a refugee, because I was in primary studying like any other person.
Then what happened?
Then when I was in primary, people were like profiling us. Oh. We're in Somali, like, what are you going to tell me? You know, and that time I was like, so what if I'm a Somali? How does that affect you? Mm-hmm. And then later on, and somebody even told me, you know, you are just refugees. Nini wakimbizi tumekimbia kwenu, mnakuja kutuletea fujo huko. And then they were like, oh, you know, you are just refugees. You ran out from your country. You are here to create a lot of chaos in our country. And at that time, I was in primary school. I never knew who a refugee is. So I had to go back and ask my parents when I went home. And I went to ask my dad, because he was my best friend. And then I was like, Dad, Somebody in school was trying to call me a refugee. Am I a refugee? I want to know. And who is a refugee? I was like, stop talking about those things now. Here we are in another country. I was like, no, I want to know. What I know, that Kenya is my country. Mm-hmm. Mombasa is where I live. Mm-hmm. So where is this country coming from? And people are trying to tell me you're Somali. He told me, yes, you are a Somali. Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Where? You are a Somali. He told me in Somali language, like, where, and Swahili language, where when I'm Somali, you have to accept that. Mm-hmm. You cannot say that you are a Kenyan or what. You are a Somali by blood, and your country of origin is Somalia. And that is when he started explaining things to me. He told me, I know it will be very hard for you, but since you've been asking, let me just try to tell you these things. Mm-hmm. We came out from your country of origin, that is Somalia, because of war. And the war started because they didn't want the former president, and he was one of the best president in Somalia. He was doing a lot. So they just took him for granted, like... So he started explaining those things.
What is the name of the president?
Mohammed Siad Barre. Mm-hmm. So when he started explaining those things, I was like, why would they do that to a very nice president where you have free education, you can do a lot in your country, you have peace? I was like, you are a child now, stop asking those things, go back to school. So that is where I started this interest from. I was like, I know, I have to know.
How did you feel?
At first, it was I was so shocked. I didn't know. It was very hard for me to believe. Like, hey, I'm a refugee. Oh, my goodness. So if I just go to school, somebody calls me a refugee. Mkimbizi. I was like, sir, yeah, I'm a refugee. So what? So at least I had the guts. But at first, I was like, I didn't know who a refugee was. But later on, when my dad explained, I was like, hey, at least now I know. So it was very hard for me to adapt at first. But it took me a while to accept who I am and where I come from.
Does it mean that you are the only Somali girl in your school by then?
No. We were a lot of Somalis. And actually, I was the one defending the other Somalis. They could not even talk. I swear to God, they could not even talk. So I used to tell them, why are you afraid? We are who we are. We should be very proud. They're like, you're so crazy. Stop doing that. They're going to beat us. I was like, nobody's going to touch us. You're a Somali. You have to be proud. I was like, I don't know. People used to call me the proud girl. I was so proud. Okay, I'm a Somali. I'm a refugee. So what? If they come to our class, you know, you always have those bullies.
Yes.
Yeah. So they used to come. At first, when they used to call me Somali, I used to cry. And if they call me like, go back to your country, you're making a lot of, in our country, a lot of chaos, you refugees. I just used to cry. But when I was told the story by my dad, I gathered the courage. I was like, so what? What are you going to do now? So I thank God at least. Mm-hmm. From that time up to now, that is where the power came from, defending the refugee rights. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy of myself that at least I'm defending those who could not even talk. We have a lot of people who cannot even raise their voices. So at least I'm here for them. I know their voices can be heard within me. In primary school, I used to tell my dad, you know, I'm going to be like you. Because he was fighting for people's rights in Somalia, my dad. So I was like, I'm going to become like you. I was, no. You know, this is not your work. This work is only meant for men. So stop doing that. I was like, no, I will become like you. The way you always keep on telling me, be kind to people, help anyone who needs anything from you. If you can assist, just help them. So I'm going to do more than that, Dad. I know I'm going to help people, and I'm going to be like you one day. So from my dad, he was like, I don't want you to do this. I know it will cause a lot of problems since you're a girl and you know it's not easy for girls. I was like, no, Daddy, I'm going to do it. But unfortunately, my dad could not witness me becoming who I am. He passed away in 2009. So I wish he was here with me right now. But it was very hard. Later on, my mom even supported me when I wanted to become the community leader. And I was the first elected chair lady of the Somali community.
Wow.
Which was very hard.
In Mombasa?
In Mombasa, yes. I was competing with around 2 men or 3 men at that time. Oh. And I defeated all those men despite all those things. So what I can say is thank you, God. I'm here where I am now because of you. So at least from that time of me becoming a leader, and now at least I'm very happy and very proud of myself, I can see the Somali women now trying to become leaders. At least they're trying to be I'm very happy for myself being a role model.
Yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of women who want to be mentored. They usually come, you know, I want to become like you. I'm saying, oh, that's okay, darling. Don't worry. Nothing is very hard. You can.
On Wings, the topic is Somali refugees. Diana Wanyonyi is interviewing Firdaus Ahmed, a refugee in Kenya who broke the gender barrier to leadership in her own community and beyond. Note that not all Somalis in Kenya are refugees. When Europeans divided the continent, they split up ethnic communities. As Kenyan independence approached in 1962, Somalis petitioned to join Somalia. An official referendum showed 86% support. The British ignored the result.
During the past election in Kenya, we even saw women in northern Kenya coming out,
yeah.
And the Somalis. You're doing a good work. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And you're not afraid?
I'm not. There was a time I got a message. Somebody told me, unajifanya mjuaji, kichwa chako, halali changu. Like you're making yourself knowing to do everything, you're doing things that is against the religion, your head is my right, your neck is my right, and I'm coming too. I was even shocked, and I even showed my mom. At that time, my father passed away already.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed my mom, Mom, I got this message. She was like, let me tell you something. Leave everything to God. Let nothing shake who you are. You are who you are because you chose to become who you are. So let this person not shake you. This is just a normal message. Let it not frighten you at all. So I took the SIM card, I broke the SIM card, and I threw the SIM card. But for a very long time, I could not even go out alone. I used to go with a lot of company. My nephews, my siblings, they used to accompany me to every place that I go. So we always get threats.
What do you think triggered that message to your phone?
Maybe we can say in terms of religion-wise, mm-hmm. because the way he was saying, it was like it is his right to do. Or whatever he's doing is rightful, because I'm doing something against the religion since I'm a woman. And he clearly indicated in the message, you cannot even feel shame. You're a Somali lady. That means I obviously knew this person was a Somali person targeting me. Because you cannot just text someone telling them, you're a Somali lady and you're going everywhere, speaking publicly, you're not even ashamed. And then I was like, I know these haters. Mm. So I just had to throw it away.
As for now, what are you doing?
For now, I'm currently the chair lady of the Mombasa Refugee Justice Center. What we basically do is enhancing protection for urban refugees, because we have seen a lot of refugees suffering and they have no shoulder to cry on. So we are here for them. We protect their rights. We also offer psychosocial support. We also do legal aids for them. It's very confidential. Whatever happens stays with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do we have refugees in Mombasa? Do they usually come out and speak?
We have a lot of refugees here in Mombasa. I cannot give out the data. It's very confidential, but we are a very big number here in Mombasa.
Mm. What are some of the key issues that are affecting these refugees here in Mombasa, in Kenya?
Okay, especially in Mombasa, we can say most of the refugees do not have access to healthcare facilities. They do not have access to education because most of them ran out from their country. We have a lot of language barrier. We also have GBV cases arising here in Mombasa.
Gender-based violence.
Yes, because we see them... let us say the refugee women do not know how to talk about their own rights. How will they know how to speak up about the GBV? They just take it. It's normal. They're being beaten. They're being deprived of their own rights. And they're just quiet about it. So after seeing all these things that refugees were going through, I came up with an organization called Beacon of Light, which helps these women. talk which helps these women and train them on their own rights first, because if you do not know how to advocate for yourself, how can you help others? So that is why we keep on training them on how to know their own rights as a refugee women first, and then they can also know about the awareness and the disadvantages that the GBV can create in their own lives. Mm-hmm. Because we have seen a lot of cases. I can talk about this scenario where a husband was beating his wife and she later on died because of how he was beating her. So if you talk about those things, at least they are aware, they can come out, speak about it. It was very hard for women to speak about those things. So I thank God now, at least we have women who are very empowered, they can speak about it.
The next topic Diana broached with Firdaus was about the cuts U.S. President Trump has made to international assistance with public services such as health care.
About Trump, there's a lot of organizations that are helping us, paying for the health care facilities and helping a lot of people, but now it has stopped because Trump has cut a lot of funding. And also there were some refugees who are having high hopes on resettlement. And since Trump has now become a president, he is targeting certain tribes, maybe like I don't want Somali people to go to United States, maybe I don't. He's targeting certain people, not only certain people, I can also say like he doesn't want to hear anything about refugees, which is affecting most of the refugees here, because they have gone through the resettlement processes, which takes a lot of time. And when they were given a go-ahead last year, Trump is already on board. So it has really affected most of them.
Why do you think these refugees, they want to relocate from the countries that they are in to America?
One of the reasons that I can say is we are thankful that Kenya has given us a place to stay, but there are a lot of things that are very limited to us. For example, we can say we do not have free movement. We cannot move freely, but if you go to UK, USA, probably most of the time people are going for the US. They have free movement. If you just go there, after very few months, you can do whatever the citizen of that country is doing. The other thing is about education, free education, even the jobs. But here, we are given a place to stay. We thank God. But most of the things we cannot do, maybe like jobs, refugees, it's very hard to work here in Kenya. Since they just see that you have a status of a refugee, it's not easy for you to get any job opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Now, about Beacon of Light, your organization that you've already started, how many members do you have?
I have 40 members, not only women. Mm-hmm. We also have youths. So far, so good, because we are creating a lot of change in the community, and that is one of the things that I've been dreaming about, is to see a change in my community, not only my community, but the whole refugee aspect. Mm-hmm. Because it's like when somebody sees a refugee, they just see this person being very vulnerable. Like you're given, I don't know how to say it, like they just give you a title that you cannot do anything at all. You are a refugee, so maybe they take you as a disabled person. That is how I can say.
Profiling.
Yeah, they just profile you. You cannot do anything. So at least now I'm motivating myself, because years back, whenever you come to look for a refugee, it was very hard for someone to even expose themselves as refugees. But now at least we are giving them that courage. Nothing is going to happen. We are who we are. We didn't want to be refugees. Mm-hmm. Things changed in our countries. We had to flee. Mm-hmm. So let us be who we are. Somebody calls us, let us present ourselves. Mm-hmm. At least now people are showing up. At least now we have that courage and we're creating a change in our community. And people are becoming enlightened and they're becoming more empowered now compared to the way we were before 5 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Any challenges that you have experienced so far by starting Beacon of Light?
The challenges we are getting, the biggest challenge being discrimination and xenophobia. But currently we are trying to create awareness on that, which is very, very hard. So at least we have tried to overcome maybe, let me say, 20 or 30% of the way we used to live, like the way we used to be discriminated. So at least now we are living in a peaceful way with the host community.
You are parting short.
About the impact that I've created, now at least we have a lot of empowered women. At least now they can speak up about their own rights. What we also do is skills development. We have instilled some skills, at least they are working and earning something so that they can feed their own families, which is a very good thing for me, because if I see an empowered woman, a woman who is working, who is not depending on any man or any assistance from any place, she can earn anything from her own sweat, I thank God, because I know I've created a way or I've created a light in someone's life.
That was Firdaus Ahmed, a Somali refugee leader, interviewed in Mombasa, Kenya, by Diana Wanyonyi.
Mi naitwa Halima Ali, nimetoka kwa Somalia kutoka 1996, niko hapa Mombasa kwa refugee. Tunaishi sehemu za inaitwa Barawa.
Diana also interviewed Halima Ali, a Somali refugee who arrived in Kenya in 1996. They spoke in the Kiswahili language.
1991. Kwa mwezi wa Januari imetokea kwa vita kwetu la makabila. Kuuana, kurep, katiwa mimi kwa 18 years, lakini ni bibi ya mtu. Likuwa tunakimbia kutafuta amani kwa msikitini.
In January 1991, Halima says, there were tribal clashes in our country. People were killed and women raped. By then I was 18 years old, but I was married. She and her husband fled their village home. They found refuge in a mosque, then moved upstairs in a house whose owners had fled the country.
Sasa manyumba hakuna mtu. Sasa wewe wanapata nyumba gorofa pia, alikuwa hakuna mtu. Sisi likuwa tunaishi, nyumba moja alikuwa gorofa ya kwanza, chini hakuna mtu. Usiku ile alikuwa wameingia wakora, wamenishukisha mpaka chini, alikuwa ataka kunirepa. Hapo ni repa, lakini Mungu amenisaidia, ulikuwa mpaka alikuwa nimevunjika hizi zina vidole. Yani ilikuwa nimepata jeraha vile ilikuwa nimenivuta kwa ngazi imenishuka shaglo. Baada hiyo ilikuwa tumepanga kwa safari. Alafu tumefika kwa amani kwa Kenya. Tunaishi paka saa hii.
Halima says the house had rooms upstairs, but there was no one downstairs. That day the goons entered the house. They dragged me downstairs. They wanted to rape me, but they didn't rape me. God helped me. My hands and body were injured. She and her husband then fled to Kenya.
Mimi kwa moja wa sasa, hiyo ilikuwa amenigusa kidogo sababu nilikuwa nimebahatika kwa mwaka jana kwa mpango za kuenda America, alafu July interview ya pili, interview ya next ndio ilikuwa umbas za America, ilikuwa sisi tulikuwa tunasubiri
Nairobi.
I was lucky last year, Halima says. I secured a space in the USA. I was planning to go to America. In July, I had two interviews. The next interview was to be conducted at an American embassy in Nairobi. We were waiting. She says lucky refugees from Somalia, Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, and Sudan have traveled to the USA to look for jobs. She said she felt very sad when we heard that the U.S. president had refused refugees, especially from Somalia.
Sasa mpaka saa hii ilikuwa mwaka sasa, tumesikia kama mipinga kwa, yani kuenda kwa marafiki, especially ya kutoka Somalia.
I was hoping through God's will, she says, we will go there.
Kwa uwezo wa Mungu, inshallah, tunaenda tu, inshallah, tunatarajia tu siku moja hii atakubali.
That was Somali refugee Halima Ali. Meanwhile, in the United States, Minnesota is home to more than 118,000 Somali immigrants and their descendants, many of them poor and eligible for public welfare. The state admits there was fraud in distributing federal funds, but finds Trump's allegation of $19 billion preposterous. The first major federal case convicted Amy Bach, the white American woman who headed the nonprofit Feeding Our Future, for fraudulent distribution of food supplement funds. 77 more defendants pled guilty or were convicted, mainly Somalis. The poor in Somali communities were victims. Cases related to other benefits are pending, but senior federal prosecutors are resigning rather than let government dictate their procedures. Thanks to Diana Wanyonyi for the Somali interviews, and to your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be viewed on the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle Is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Attention Ontario pickleball players. The Maple Leaf Pickleball Club invites you to the Smash for a Cause charity tournament in support of Jumpstart Charities. This action-packed day of competition and community spirit takes place at the Fairgrounds Racquet Club in Hamilton, Ontario, Sunday, April 26th. Whether you're playing for fun or for the podium, there are prizes to be won. And don't miss the battle for the coveted Maple Leaf Cup. Smash for a Cause. Register now at MapleLeafPickleball.org. That's MapleLeafPickleball.org. Yeah.